afternoon and a very warm welcome to the latest original Thinking podcast here at Alliance Manchester Business School. I'm Jim Pendrell, I'm the Research Communications Lead here at the school. I'm delighted today to be joined by Sasha Saddam, who is the Director of Environmental, Social and Governance at the Financial Conduct Authority. And to my right is Konstantinos Stathopoulos, who is a Professor of Accounting and Finance here at the school. Before we go any further, I'd just like you both just to perhaps just introduce yourselves a little bit about your job and what you do briefly.
Thank you, Jim. So I've been around for a long time in investments, and I've been an investor and an asset owner. And just under 2 years ago, I joined the Financial Conduct Authority, which is the regulator for the consumers in finance in the UK. And I became their first ever director of ESG. And that means to try and think of environmental, social and governance and to embed that in all the products and all of the things that we do at the Financial Conduct Authority. And I was very delighted as well in January this year to be made an honorary professor here at the business school.
Which I omitted to mention at the beginning. So, yes, indeed. Great. And Konstantinos?
Yeah, I'm a professor of accounting and finance here at the school. I've been around for 23 years. My research, I come to the ESG agenda from the governance side of things. And I've been doing research, especially big data research, on several jurisdictions. Started off with the US, UK, European Union, and some Chinese studies. And I started off, you know, by working on executive compensation. But of course, I've tried to branch out, you know, to many different areas of corporate governance. And now I'm very keen, you know, to look at the regulatory space and what's going on with ESG. Some amazing developments we're going to be talking about.
Very good. Okay, just start with you, Sasha. And you mentioned there this new role that the FCA brought in a couple of years ago. Tell us a little bit more about why they brought in that role. And what your key objectives actually are?
Well, it's ESG, and the term environmental, social and governance is a more newly created term, but the actual acronyms mean things that have been going around for a long time. Looking after consumers, you've talked about governance and all the things that we talk about. So not all of it's new, but this has become very mainstream and lots of financial companies talk about it and some of them are selling lots of products on that. And the FCA needs to make sure it's at the top of the table, making sure it understands these areas and tries to lead, hopefully, in the world on some of the areas that we tried to make internationally. And so I joined someone who'd had a background of investing to try and help bring some practical experience to the regulator and help with the new topics that are coming. So it's been just under 2 years and there's huge amounts going on in this area globally. And also in finance, and the regulator is trying to help. A lot of the time it's been asked by many people to get involved. It's not often that regulators are asked to get involved. Sometimes they're asked to move out of the way. And they've been asked to regulate products and maybe to help get some new standards, which we'll talk about. But therefore, as a regulator, what's important is to try and help your fellow colleagues at the FCA understand some of these risks and opportunities.
I mean, it strikes me it must be a very complex role given the number of different things going on globally, as you mentioned there. I mean, there's an awful lot going on in this whole space, isn't there? How is that to manage all that? Are you finding it
I think things are complex, but then most jobs are complex and it's how you manage them. But also sometimes it is quite simple. A consumer should expect a financial product to be fair and not misleading. And that's a very simple term. Now, making sure that happens is more complex on some of these new green areas, but therefore I try to bring it back to simplicity and then things like our objectives. And we have three objectives. One is to protect consumers. One is to help integrity of markets to make sure that they're fair and transparent. And the other one is to help effective competition so that people can make good choices between that. And when you use those lenses, it makes it quite easy.
Okay, well, we'll come on, I'm sure, to more of those points in depth. Perhaps just a more general question to start is how we make businesses more sustainable for the longer term. Konstantinos, this is something you've been looking at, I know, for some time. How do you actually make businesses more sustainable?
That's a very good question, Jamie.
And a big one.
And a very big one. And to be honest with you, my take in it is, first of all, I don't think every company will make it and will manage to transition to a much more sustainable business model. So there is, It all depends on the corporate culture and especially the adaptability and whether the company is willing to change. And of course, to a certain extent, it also depends on how embedded the current business models are to the brown economy. So my take in that is that, unfortunately, some firms won't make it, so they will perish. And societies have to accept this cost because there is going to be a substantial cost, but it's a necessary cost that we have to take. In general terms, you ask me, you know, okay, what are the main characteristics of businesses that I think they will become more sustainable in the long term? The most adaptable, the most flexible, and probably the ones that invest heavily on innovation, the most innovative ones, are the ones probably that would make that transition in a smooth and orderly fashion.
Mm. I would say, in investing terms, for many, many years, companies thrive and other companies perish. Mm. And this is just another evolution of that. When we think about things like climate change, we've seen what's happening to the electric vehicle market and the combustion engines and the ones that have been innovative and started to move, but there've also been some new players out there, as we know, that have suddenly come from nowhere and have now got market caps bigger than all the others. So I think this is part of just good business. And what we need to make sure is we try to just make sure that either the investors have the information that they need, and also that there's the right boards and governance and skill sets that people can have innovation or challenge. Because one of the things we want on the governance side is to make sure that companies have the right abilities to make difficult decisions. And when you do that, before you make those big decisions, you need to be trying to tick as many, you know, check it as many times as possible and ask the tough questions before you make decisions.
Mm. You mentioned there the information being available to consumers, which is a very important point, and something that perhaps brings us to another whole area, which is the area of greenwashing and the extent to which companies, you know, are they still greenwashing, or are those days now thankfully gone? In terms of the ESG sort of credentials, I know you've been researching this constantly. You know, so where are we now, do you think, in terms of this? Because the regulators are more interested now as well in this. I mean, what where are we with this?
So the international research evidence that we get is a very mixed bag. So I would say that we have very good intentions and some very good practices, but at the same, a lot of green and social washing. Let's not forget that there is an S there in the ESG acronym, and it's equally important. The social dimension of things is equally important. Critically, as far as I'm concerned, the biggest concern that I have as a researcher is that we don't see the investment community facilitating the transition as much as we should. In what sense? So there's always this big question in academia, is there a valuation effect? So do we see that firms get a premium when they're ESG friendly? The biggest finding, and this is kind of a latest finding that we observe, you know, internationally, is that many ESG-friendly funds, they invest in safe sectors, so in sectors that are not necessarily polluting, they don't have a significant carbon footprint, or they already, for example, you know, treat their employees in a fair manner. So they don't go into the areas where we want their input into making sure that facilitate this transition into a more sustainable business model.
And those areas would be what exactly?
So the ones where you have, you know, the most pronounced ESG problems. So I mentioned, you know, carbon footprints, you know, so oil and gas, it's one area where we should be looking at. Employee welfare, when you have, you know, manufacturing, especially offshoring in jurisdictions where probably they don't have very strict regulatory settings and frameworks. So these are the areas we should be looking at, and we're ESG-friendly funds should become more active stewards, and they should engage much more with these companies to try to make them, you know, force them, if you like, innovate in a way that would allow them to move into more sustainable models.
Yeah, I'd take a step back and just say, this is an industry that's grown pretty quickly, and it's gone from when I first started niche to becoming very mainstream, and most companies now talk about sustainability in certain different ways, and so you get growing pains and people have gone very quickly, and sometimes they have either over exaggerated or made some claims which they've really tried to achieve a lot of the time, but just didn't have the tools in the toolkit. But secondly, it is an area that the trust and credibility has been eroded, and therefore that's why regulators, as I said, have been asked, we want you to come in and we want you to start trying to just do this. So one of our big strategies is transparency. If you're going to say something, then let's see what you're doing. But also comparability, and that's the thing that we maybe should talk about in a minute, that you've got to compare, because all companies should be looking after their staff and their well-being, their churn ratios, or how do they pay them, and what kind of incentives. And I think so this stuff is really coming to the fore, and what we're finding is that people want to buy products that are linked to this. So a lot of ESG products have been the fastest selling products, but they haven't always done what they've said because it's new. And so it's very new. So we're trying to help bring some new and first initial rules to try and help that market. But we are trying to help that market. But I really am clear that it's not our job to tell people you should buy ESG products. It's fine if you don't want to buy them. But people do seem to, and everything we do from our financial life survey says that people would like their money to do something as well as make a profit.
On the other side, you know, you've got the investing community who increasingly, this is what they're focusing on. Mm-hmm. You know, they could be investment in a company. You know, they might say, well, we're not going to invest in you unless you do X, Y, Z, or ESG credentials. And that's already happening, isn't it? In the private equity world, for instance. So these things are moving at pace, aren't they? You know?
They are moving at pace, and that's where this phrase about greenwashing is, because people are buying products and then expecting them to achieve these goals. And so we're trying very hard with our labeling regime, which is coming out hopefully soon, Q3, to sort of talk about how you can actually map what you want. So one of the things I talked about at the beginning was fair and not misleading. So we're trying to help. And of course, a consumer doesn't want to read, you talked about disclosure, it doesn't want a 430-page prospectus. So it's about whether you get a 2-page document that can explain quite clearly why it's invested in this and what is it trying to achieve. And one of the things we need to talk about later is we need to get more metrics so that we can actually understand if it is achieving those goals. And what happens if you don't? Because life is about not always succeeding and being perfect. What happens if the company you invested in didn't do what you thought? When do you exclude it? When do you divest and bring another one in? Those things are absolutely fine, and that's part of our improve label.
Okay, lots to think about there. Perhaps one just for you, Sasha, is, you know, the FCA is working, you know, internationally, isn't it, as you mentioned before, for a set of clearly defined sustainability metrics via the International Sustainability Standards Board. Is that correct? I just wonder how that's all progressing, because that's a very large piece of work, isn't it, globally?
It is, but back to the point that we started with, it's no good having a great set of metrics that's only regional. Because most investors and most companies are global. And we invest our pension money, our savings products in internationally renowned companies. And so trying, again, from a new area, to get accounting standards to think of non-financial metrics. So just think about that. How long did it take to pay your suppliers? I'd like that information to be able to compare that around the world. And I know there are people that would like to buy products that pay their suppliers quite quickly. It's also a really interesting metric to see how you are looking. When you say that you've got a good culture in your firm, well, if you don't pay your suppliers quickly and they don't want to work with you, then that's always a really interesting point. So that's the S point of it. So I think it's really important that we work internationally. Now, I've been very fortunate that the FCA has been doing this for quite a while. We're very much seen as one of the leaders in this area. And I'm on the board of a few things that are linked to trying to get these global standards happening. And we're hoping to get the ISSB, as you said, to up and running with its first set of standards by July, August of this year. So right. It's happening very quickly. Now, it will take time to report, and it came to new products and everything else, but this is happening now.
Is this the direction of travel, do you think? I mean, the point about supplier payments, you know, you think of that as very much an issue just to Britain, you know, it's just to British companies.
No.
And, you know, point being, until now, maybe that it always, your mindset is, if you're a company only trades in the UK, then why would you be worrying about it? But what's interesting here is, no, globally, you could have actually a standard, couldn't you,
absolutely,
on that?
Absolutely.
Which is a totally different kind of discussion, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's a very big issue in Europe specifically as well. They really care about them. Looking after your employees, but also the suppliers. So I think it's very bigger than just the UK, but you're right. Things were done. It's not that they're not done. They were just done differently. And the problem is if we're all speaking slightly different dialects, then we can't compare and contrast. And that's what's really important. It's the comparing and contrasting, because some people will want to know. And if I'm on a board of a company is going, I want to report once. I don't want to report once to people in this country or people in another region. And so this is something that's been demand led. And I think we forget that sometimes. It's the corporates have been saying, we're getting asked this by our investors or our employees, and we want to be able to show them that we're world leading or that we're doing something. And so this is something that has been crying out for that people do. Now, don't get me wrong, everyone wants slightly, when you're starting any new state, everyone's got a view.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have to get a global baseline, and that's what we're trying.
If I may jump in here, you know, so I think we have, as Sasa said, you know, we're moving very quickly and in the right direction. But I would actually say that probably we need to allow time for things to get embedded. Let me just give you an example. In accounting, we always say, you know, that, well, we've been fighting and debating for more than 50 years, you know, about the definition of earnings. And we have regulated or over-regulated earnings. And there's still a lot of earnings manipulation going on out there in the real world, right? Of course, we should manage expectations a little bit. You know, it's going to take time for things, you know, to work out as they should or as the regulators intend to. Just give it time. Definitely, we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and I would say a couple of points. The first thing is disclosure isn't everything.
Yeah.
But this is one part of lots of things that are going on. And secondly, I think you're right. I think what we're trying to say is that we don't want to rush this too much. We're looking at assurance. So it's got to be material because we've been here before. I've been in many investor meetings where a company just finds that it's done something like, oh, we have some dolphin friendly soap. And you go, well, thank you. But is it, how many bars do you sell? And it's, well, not that many. And you go, well, that's not irrelevant. You know, it's not helping me. So it's got to be practical and financially material, and it takes time. But people are employees, consumers, the electorate, governments regulate. They're wanting this quite soon because this is the new world that we live in.
That point there about, you know, trying to have global standards effectively, it's very ambitious, as you say. It's going to take time. But also it's going to be very interesting for governments around the world, how they're going to sort of react to this direct, what appears the direction of travel is quite clear. You can't really go against it, or maybe some countries will, but I don't know.
I'd say it the other way. This is about investments, and the people that are probably the most important are the international securities regulators, so listing bonds, equities, infrastructure, and they've got an organisation, the International Securities Regulator, IOSCO. I'm the vice chair of the sustainable finance side of that, and they're all trying to drive this. Now, they're all having quite rightly intense debates about quality and then about pace. And so what will happen, and I think you've eloquently said it, it might be that small companies don't adopt this so quickly, and large global companies who've one wanted it, but also their investors and their owners demand it, will do this first, and it will trickle down. But I think the direction, the road is definitely going that way.
Mm. Yeah.
And governments have been wanting that, but they will come at different speeds, I would say.
You touched as well on, Sasha, the need for more research in various areas. Are there particular areas where you think there is a need for more research? When we're sitting here in a business school, I mean, are there particular things that you think, yeah, there are areas where, you know, and also with your role here, your role here as well as an honorary professor, I mean, are there particular things you think, yes, that's where we...
Well, I think academics yearn for is data and quality assured data. And so our job as global regulators and standard setters is to try and help you get that data. And examples would be on climate. We don't have all that data yet. And even when we do, people have been cherry picking because there's been no rules. It's not been a criticism. So what we're trying to do is make it comparable. And so I can't wait for Costas and others to have data on net zero plans on companies in the same sector and say, which ones do you think are better? And then do they perform better? Do they get a lower cost of capital? And all of those things. And I think let's change the subject from climate. Diversity, you know, socioeconomic diversity, obviously all types of diversity are quite important because we don't want groupthink. And that's something that you've been doing a lot of work on. We want challenge and governance. Now, if we can get more data on that and see that companies that have more diversity do perform better, and we have had some evidence, but it's been mixed and you're the expert, then that will help you. But it will also help us realise that that's an important key risk metric.
Absolutely. So I think this is a very key issue. We need to, as academics, to be in a position to inform policy. But in order to inform policy in a way that's robust, we need the appropriate data to run our analysis. And this is where we're going to be helped a lot by all these different initiatives. So I certainly hope that a few years down the line, you know, we're going to be in a position to inform policy in a much more informative way compared to what we've done so far.
And we're not adding new stuff. There already is this data, but it's just not been done in the same uniform way. So sometimes we're shrinking and making a bit easier for corporates, because remember, we do understand it's difficult running a big corporate and being asked 100 different things and people caring about a lot of different topics. So we've got to make sure it's material and it's relevant.
Yeah. I must mention, talking about data and flavour of the month, isn't it, AI? And is there a role, what will be the role of AI in all this? I mean, you talk about these very complex systems globally. I mean, is that being looked at?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I will defer to that, but I would say that all companies are trying to use all the tools in the toolkit. So you've seen many hedge funds and sophisticated private equity trying to use machine learning already to try and read transcripts and understand how companies are doing or what kind of behaviours, whether people use the word I all the time or we. So there's lots of stuff going on for a long time. So there's always people trying to get an edge. But yes, there's satellites being launched to understand methane gas so that we can get much better understanding and maybe not believing some of the numbers that they get, because they'll be able to do it from there. So loads of different technology, including AI.
Absolutely. Just to say that this is not something new, right? Mm, so I was recently in a conference where somebody reported that apparently more than 80% of all the downloads from SEC, so the Securities and Exchange Commission in the US, the main regulator in the US, is actually from bots. So computers download all the official filings and they automatically analyze them in real time, more or less, the moment they get uploaded, so that they can give an edge to some investor who wishes, you know, to trade on this kind of information.
Yeah.
So we don't need AI. It's already been happening.
Already, it's already, it's already out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just come back a little bit, Sasha, one here. Tell us a little bit more about the work with the, the Transition Plan Task Force, TPT.
Yeah.
Just help us. What is this?
Well, this is quite simple, and I hope that I'll be able to explain this quite simply.
I mean, told you to ask this question, so
okay.
What it is.
So, at COP26 in Glasgow, we had all these wonderful things that were going on, and there's this thing called GFANTS, the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero. Everyone signing up for net zero, and normally for 2050. So that was great. So people were pushing over themselves, saying, "I'm going to go net zero. I'm going to go net zero." And so we think nearly 80% of the listed companies in the UK have made announcements of this. Now that's nice and that's great, but 2050 is quite a long way away. So you need to start thinking about what you're doing now. And so what was announced at COP26 by the UK government was we try and come up with some practical steps with this transition plan task force to try and say, if you're going to say that you're going 2050, and by the way, you don't have to say net zero, you've volunteered it as a board of a company or whatever, that fill in this kind of similar template and way of doing it so that we can see whether it's a credible plan to get to net 20. And not always from a negative point of view, to try and help you as well, because we want people to get there. And the UK government and many other governments have said, we're committing by law to get to net zero by 2050. So the companies, so we've had London Stock Exchange, Aviva, NatWest, Unilever, Legal & General, you've had the regulators like myself, and you've had the government all coming together saying, how do we make this happen? We've already published, that's already happened. We've listened to consultation, and companies are now starting to give their transition plans already. And the first plan is never going to be perfect, but we're giving a little bit of relaxation, saying, but this is what we want. And at some point we will do what we've done in the past, where we said, this is now not voluntary, this will be mandatory. And we think that this will be used globally, and we want this. This is a practical step of saying, stop saying that you're going to sign net zero, show me how you're doing. Is it linked to your pay? Who's the person that's going to be responsible? What's your 2030 target? Thanks for 2050, but what are you doing now? So there's some examples of that.
What's interesting here to me is that the FCA, its remit here is really quite broad. And is it the case that it's over recent years, the government's realised that your organisation actually is a very good one to help sort of bring these things together and actually look at these debates and questions? Because I don't think everyone would imagine the FCA would have all these these sort of responsibilities, but it's striking how many things they're involved with.
But I did, but remember, as I said, we were collaborating with others.
Yeah.
So again, but that's part, we have a part of that jigsaw puzzle, not all of it, but a very important part because of the listing rules, but also the fair, not misleading statements that people make, And also the fact that we're internationally, we can help others get to this path. But you're right, the government has written us a letter that says part of those three priorities that I've told you, our objectives, we want you to have regard that finance helps get the UK to net zero by 2050. So it's in our remit. So yes, it said you should be thinking about this when you're looking at finance, at how it can also play its part. We're not making anyone do anything, but they've already signed up to net zero. It wasn't us that said it. Now show you to deliver it. Exactly. So yeah. I hope the point of the collaboration is coming in, not just doing it on our own.
No, I think it's just sort of quite striking this role, you know, how many different things you're involved with in your role as well.
But I think it's more finance is involved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you know as well as I do, finance is a real, you know, if there's money to be made or there's money to be lost, that helps make decisions happen and at speed.
And it's quite funny because we kept on talking about transitioning, but by definition, that needs a roadmap. So I think finally we have come to the realization that we need this kind of roadmap, and there are many players, regulators, the markets themselves, significant market players as well, you know, getting involved in this process in many different ways. So it's all about coming up with an appropriate roadmap towards achieving the end goal. As Sasa said, you know, on so many occasions you see firms where they come up with the ultimate goal but never tell you what is the strategy of achieving that particular goal. Yeah. And bringing down to more achievable targets is something that's going to help everybody, corporate boards, investors, regulators, us, when we go out there, you know, and we try to examine these practices and try to figure out what are the optimal or best practices out there.
But then it'll be up to the owners of the capital to decide whether it's a good plan or not. Shouldn't be our job.
Absolutely.
It should be up to the owners.
I'm glad you mentioned targets, because I was going to ask about metrics a bit more, actually. And how we ultimately ensure, you know, that the right sustainability metrics are actually measured. Who's to say they are the right one? You know, this is a very live debate, isn't it? How do you approach this subject?
So I think you mentioned the right keyword here, you know, right targets. And I don't think that every single company will have exactly the same targets.
They shouldn't.
That's what I'm trying to get to. You know, that at the end of the day, you should look at what is your business model, what is your purpose as a company, and try to identify the core sustainability objectives that are meaningful and material for you, and try to build the right metrics to address these objectives. So to a certain extent, what we need is something that will incentivize people to take the right actions. What we need is also something that is very verifiable, comparable in terms of performance measures. We don't need something that's too unique, too exotic, that cannot be verified, that cannot be measured properly by different actors out there in the capital markets. And of course, don't try to address everything. Try to focus on the things as a company and as a board, the things that are material to you and your investors. And that would make a heck of a difference.
Oh, I fully concur. The first thing is people sometimes, they're so, in a way, they really try, because their employees want them to do lots as well. Because this is coming from the inside. It's not coming from outside. Some of the outside, but a lot of people they know. They want to work for firms that are doing the right thing and doing, but you've got to pick some things. And you can't pick everything. And of course, there are sector-specific things. So obviously, if you're a cement company or oil and gas company, then climate is going to be absolutely up there. But it's more about picking that and thinking what's material, because you're going to have some business risks. And some of them are going to be ESG, but some of them are not going to be ESG, and that's fine. But I do think it's really important that we just try and bring it back. And then the standards that we've been talking about have been based on industry. There's been something called SASB, which is the only other acronym I've used, the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, which has been run by companies, CFOs and investors. And let me think about the non-financial metrics that matter in an airline industry or in a chemicals industry, and then just do what's important in those sectors. And I think that's the kind of thing we're trying to do. But you're right, don't boil the ocean in terms of trying to do everything, because you'll end up failing, because it's hard out there. You've got to just pick five or six things that are really material and just aim for them, and include it in your pay and incentives.
But this was I'm thinking, as you're talking about auditing and accounts, and a lot of debate about what should go on the balance sheet these days beyond the numbers. I know your colleagues and yourself have been looking at this for quite some time. Well, this is another dimension, isn't it, to this? And
absolutely,
an important one, which probably is probably overlooked a little bit.
But it's highly related to what we're discussing here, you know, because at the end of the day, what you need when you're looking at non-financial measures and metrics, what you need is external verification. So audit is going to play a very significant role in that. But you need the standards so that you allow the auditors to do their work in a meaningful way. And if I may, I would say that I think that in non-financial measures, we probably need more of principles-based approaches to building their standards and frameworks rather than rules-based mm-hmm. approaches. There's so much room for interpretation, maneuvering, and if I may, so manipulation as well, which means that a principles-based approach is going to be in a position, it's going to allow us to hold key actors, especially corporate managers, to account. If we go into a very strict rules-based approach, we are running the risk of playing the game that we had with earnings that I mentioned previously, right? You know, running in circles, more than 50 years of a lot of research, a lot of policy intervention, and then still quite significant manipulation.
We've had really good chats about this, and I think you'll be glad to know that at the same time, we're about to get the first set of global sustainability standards. In parallel, the securities regulator, which I've been helping and my team have been helping, we're looking at the assurance side of it, because you've got to trust the numbers. It's no good having lots of numbers if you don't trust them. So the trust and credibility, and the one good thing about audit, they've had practice of this. Now, of course, it's slightly different and they've got to learn new skills. And we were talking about that mm-hmm. before, weren't we, that they're going to have to learn new skills, because then a typical auditor might not be a very good environmental expert, but you can get that expertise or you can get that type of thing. But it's very important to get that trust. And so there is good work going on, just to reassure you that they're already thinking about, it's not just get the number, mm-hmm. is it a credible number?
Yeah.
And that's in parallel.
I think the wider point as well is that these professions like auditing are mm-hmm. going to have to change as well. They're going to have to completely reassess how they operate and what they do.
The only thing I would say,
many reviews of the auditing industry have been competed recently. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. The only thing I would say is, if it's, I mean, I'm going back to my basic investor thing, if it was material, you should be worrying about it now anyway. And if you're worried that the fact is that you might lose your license to operate because you've got, let's say, a mine, then you should absolutely be making sure that you're thinking about it. Or if your employees, a lot of firms don't actually make much, it's intellectual property, academia. So your employees, so you've got to make sure your reputation, how you treat the staff, how you treat the customer, that's so important. Well, then you should be thinking about that now. And of course, an auditor should be able to go, well, how, prove that you're doing it. So it's not all new, that's all. Some of it is, but it's not all new.
That's just a final question. We're sat in the business school, lots of mm-hmm. students here. And the message for them, and perhaps what you see, Konstantinos, when you're teaching as well today, I mean, the interest in this whole subject and perhaps the knowledge of this subject. Is it something that's still, there's a lot, quite a way to go in terms of mm-hmm. educating business students, or are they already kind of aware of these debates you've been having today?
Absolutely, yeah. So two interesting things. You know, the first one is that we live in very interesting times. I used to tell my students, because I teach corporate governance, so I used to tell my students, okay, here is a corporate scandal, here is another corporate scandal, and we need to address it, and we need to do this and that. Now we see positive change, and that excites students. And they try to see how they can take it forward, how they have the right questions, they debate things, they want to try to figure out what the future will look like in this particular area, in this arena. So I think it's a very exciting area, and that's why we see that in most of our elective courses here in the business school, we oversubscribe whenever we teach this area.
And just finally, Sachin, in your new role here, what's the things you're going to be
doing? I would very much, and I do tell them, that no one's got all the answers, so you're going to be at the forefront. And this generation is definitely caring about this more. All the surveys show that. The employees, if you want to go and work for a big, an oil and gas company, they're trying to get engineers, they have to demonstrate that they have got a net zero plan, that they are changing. And so therefore, I think this is something that is happening all the time. And in finance, banks and insurance companies are really trying to change, but it's difficult. And they will need these students to come and help them, whether it's in finance or in real business, to try and bring that intellectual rigor to this.
I think that's a very suitable notion, which probably to finish. It's been a really, really interesting discussion. Many thanks, Sacha Zanam,
for
coming into the school and sharing your knowledge with us. And thank you, Konstantinos, as well. And thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.